F1A, The Minor Prophets, The Laws of the Christ. Number 1A.
Now, the subject of this week is, as you know, the minor prophets. Sometimes I also speak about the major prophets, just as they come in. And so, in a way, perhaps you have asked yourself why I only was dealing with the 12 minor prophets and not with all the prophets. The reason is that John Dolly was dealing with the major prophets very extensively, and therefore I felt that was not my job to present that also. Whereas he did not deal with all the minor prophets, only with five, not with seven others. So that I felt was my job, and naturally then to bring all those prophets within the framework of a matrix. Now, I think what we can do this week is about this, that for the first 2 days or so, Monday and Tuesday, we'll try if we can understand the minor prophets from a deductive point of view, meaning that we will ask ourselves, what is a matrix, what is a Christ matrix, and try to see if in a deductive way we can decipher, decode really the prophets, which is nothing more than can we in a deductive way arrive at the conclusion, what is the Christ idea in all its many facets. So then afterwards, perhaps for 2 days, that would be on the Tuesday, Wednesday and Thursday, I would like to read with you in the class some of the minor prophets together and use it as an opportunity for text interpretation, so that you get acquainted with the way the Bible text can be interpreted. And then the last 2 days, Friday and Saturday, would be then the most interesting 2 days, in which I want to do the very opposite, namely to show you the inductive way from the biblical text up to the Christ matrix, how we arrived at the Christ matrix from the text of the Bible. That was the original way of doing it, and then also exercise ourselves in the laws of the minor prophets. So this should be more or less the layout of this week. Naturally, when I speak about the minor prophets, you know that this is a subject that I have been presenting 25 years ago, a whole generation already in London in 1960, and then was writing the book on the minor prophets in 1962. And when I read it over, there is hardly anything that I would change. There are one or the other point which we know I would like to change and which we will discuss also. But in the whole, it is still a presentation that holds good. Now, I have asked all those who attend this class to make preparatory work, to study not only the minor prophets in the Bible, but also to study really my book, especially in regard to treating it from the point of view of a matrix. So those who have done that preparatory work will, I guess, be in a position to follow me rather easily. But I cannot take into consideration those who perhaps have not done the work and therefore at one or the other point may have difficulty in following what I do. The presentation that I want to give, you can already see from what I said before, is perhaps a new angle on the books. We will not just go over that Minor Prophet book from page to page and see what is in it. I would rather bet that when you end this week that you feel that the Minor Prophets are something very different than what perhaps you were been thinking about the Minor Prophets up to now. I think we can give to the Minor Prophets after a generation has gone by a completely different slant, can you say a slant at it, a different viewpoint at it, a viewpoint that is much more adapted to the present age than it was 25 years ago. Today we are much more thinking in the way how the 6,000 year period is slowly yielding and the 7,000 year period is slowly coming into our consciousness, which means that the approach to the subject of Christian Science undergoes that change from the 6,000 year period consciousness to the 7,000 year period consciousness, which is something very different. And the subject that we are dealing with this week will be seen more and more in the light of the 7,000 year period. Naturally, I have to show it from the 6,000 year period first and then use that as a method of bringing consciousness further to the 7,000 year period of consciousness. Now, when I say this 6,000 year period of consciousness, 7,000 year period of consciousness, naturally I say that well knowing that most of you, or practically all of you, have attended last year my class 5, and in that class 5 we spent quite a long time at the beginning on two distinct subjects. The first subject was for many hours on the subject of metaphysics and science, the difference. And the second one was the 1,000-year periods in regard to the form of consciousness, namely how the form of consciousness has changed from the first 1,000-year period up to the present time, in so far as we can symbolize reality always differently, always from a higher standpoint, in the measure that we advance and through the 1,000-year period. So these are two subjects that I also more or less take as a subject that you have been acquainted with over the last year, especially since I started with that subject in many years ago when I did the chapter on Genesis and then especially on Apocalypse. I was showing that development. Now, in order to get into rhythm of what I want to present in the Minor Prophets as from the standpoint of the 6th and then from the standpoint of the 7,000 year period, I think I would like to spend this evening just an hour and then perhaps tomorrow another hour in reviewing those two big subjects. The big subject of metaphysics and science, and perhaps tomorrow the 1,000 year periods. Now, in regard to the very first subject about the difference between metaphysics and science, I have in the meantime published a little booklet. It looks like this, a little booklet called Metaphysics and Science in Christian Science. It's a small booklet, but has in a very concentrated way in it the substance between the difference of metaphysics and science, a subject that to my sense is most important today, just as the subject of tomorrow on the 1,000-year periods is to my sense of greatest importance. By the way, the subject of those thousand-year periods will be published, during the winter, in a little booklet too, perhaps about 50 or 60 pages, so that you will have a good summary of those thousand-year periods in regard to the relationship between reality and symbolization of reality. So if your notes are not too good for the moment, you still can hope that within a half a year or so we will have that booklet and you will have a clear-cut presentation, very short but a concise presentation of that subject. You can ask me why I feel that really these two subjects are of such great importance of today. And I always felt that there is something in a student that holds him back constantly. That there is something in the student that he tries constantly to add and add more knowledge on Christian Science, to add more truths on Christian Science. And it uses the method of accretion, of adding up and adding up. But the method of accretion is not a scientific method of understanding any subject. What we need is not just accretion, but what we need is an evolution through mutations, through a complete change of the form of consciousness, through those paradigm shifts in consciousness that we could witness over the last 6,000-7,000 year period, so that one looks at the same thing, at the same subject, in a completely different way. It is therefore not a question of analyzing much more every word and every sentence in the Bible and in the textbook in order to have a deeper grasp of the subject, but much more it is that one can take a completely different view at the subject. And that completely different view is something that the students somehow are not trained to do, or they are even afraid to do it. They are being trained that they just add one sentence to the next sentence, here a truth, there a truth, here I have read something nice, and there I have read something nice, and my practitioner has told me this nice thing, and my teacher has said this and that, and it's just accumulating isolated truth. And the students somehow have not even the courage, say, to say, well, isn't there a completely different approach to the whole subject? We do not deviate from the Bible and the textbook, but what we do is to look at it from a different standpoint. And that's something that is in the air in every science. This century, especially the second part of this century, is a time where all over the world, in all the sciences, people began to realize that the old way of orthodox science, the classical scientific approach of analysis, is not really that which brings us any further. Quite on the contrary, that it hides really the big truth. And so just as in the atom you have the quantum jump or the quantum leaps, where suddenly something absolutely different appears, which is not really defined through the law of cause and effect, where there is a complete jump, there is a complete mutation, there is a complete shift taking place, that only through that method really we will be able to see deeper into the subject. I always think that this is something one has to have the courage to do so, And when one looks into Mrs. Eddy's textbook, one already finds right on the first page in the preface how she brings out this very necessity of having a different look at the thing. She says, it is the task of the sturdy pioneer really to hew the tall oak and to cut the rough granite. But future ages, it's now a century since she wrote that, future ages must declare what the pioneer has accomplished. It is now our duty and our job really to throw real light on the textbook from our standpoint. She said it takes centuries until the textbook will be understood and demonstrated. Well, one century has passed. Well, shall we wait longer and longer and longer and always hold back to the same way of reading the textbook, reading the Bible word by word and thinking by this method of addition we will get anywhere? Or later on in the textbook, Mrs. Eddy makes a paragraph and with a marginal heading which reads a higher discovery. And under that higher discovery, she also points out that many years ago, the author made a spiritual discovery. Then she said, gradually, this will gather momentum. You see, she said, as time goes on, it will gather momentum and clearness until it reaches its culmination of scientific statement and proof. So indicating that the statement on Christian Science is something else than to read the textbook, that the statement on Christian Science must state what the pioneer really has seen and which he couldn't at his time declare because the time was not ripe, just as in Jesus' time the time was not ripe to declare Christian Science. So he had to put it into the framework of the consciousness of his time. So let's have courage to tackle the textbook and the Bible from a quite different and new standpoint with a new outlook. I just say that over and over in order first to prepare thought that we should be willing not to expect this week that we will chew over what is in the Minor Prophet or in the Minor Prophet book, though the text is still good and holds good, but that we can approach it from a very different standpoint. I have always pointed out during the last 2 or 3 years, and if I have seen something that seems to be important, I repeat it and I repeat it until nobody can miss the point anymore. And that is what Mrs. Eddy has written in Unity of Good, in that article, Caution in the Truth, where at her time when she wrote it, that was 1886-7, 100 years ago, that she was saying that at her time she only could present her discovery as a science of physical harmony, and that was enough for her age, that the age would be willing to bear. She said it was radical enough to promote as forcible collisions of thought as the age has the strength to bear. She said, I couldn't tell them really the real discovery, namely divine science. It is that article in which she wanted to show that God knows no sin, disease, nor death, that God knows no matter, no error. That she wanted to present, but she said, I couldn't do it. The age was not ready to accept that. And so she had to water it down to the science of physical harmony, to the science of physical healing. And she said that at that time that even the thinkers are not prepared to answer intelligent questions about God and sin. So why should she be able to do that when the whole world was not ready to accept it? So she had to spoon-fed, so to say, her age with what the age could bear, but then saying that the platoons of Christian Science must first be thoroughly drilled in the plain manual of their spiritual armament. So she could see that it first takes a long period, and she estimates that it takes another 50 years. Another 50 years in which first the platoons of Christian Science must be thoroughly drilled in what? In the plainer manual of their spiritual armament. So, and then, she goes on and says, then in another 50 years, then it will be seen what she really has discovered. Namely, then it will be seen that the pith of her discovery will be the science of spiritual harmony, and not in the first place the science of physical harmony. But as we know, it takes time. One can't do that in one day, not in 1 year, not in 5 years, to drill oneself in the plainer manual of our spiritual armament, which we know what they are. We know that at that time, when those 50 years were over, actually John Dolly came and showed us how we could be drilled in that spiritual armament by taking those three great categories of capitalized terms that Mrs. Eddy presents in her textbook, and say these three great categories of capitalized terms are actually the manual with which we can use in order to investigate the textbook, or to, even more than that, in order to understand the science of being, being with a capital B, the science of those capitalized terms. So, those 50 years passed over, and her prophecy was fulfilled at that time, so practically at that time did not know that it happened. It's always like this, that the babe is born somewhere in Bethlehem in a cradle, and nobody knows about it, and only afterward in retrospect one sees what a great experience was going on, what a great discovery was being discovered. Only in retrospect one begins to see the bigness of it. And we have to do that. Since then, another 50 years have passed, and we can look back again to that time of 50 years ago, and can see how much has passed or has happened in the spiritual realm. The point I want to bring out is that when these new developments set in, either the world does not know it, or those who know about it get a shock. Because it's really asking a lot for the human mind to give up its treasured beliefs and treasured opinions that they entertain in the human mind, and say, let's drop it, something completely new is coming to happen. I was interested in, recently, just before I came lately, in an article by a well-known man in Europe. I don't know if you know him. He's one of the top physical scientists, top world peace researcher. It's Professor Weizsäcker, the brother of the president of Germany. And he said in a lecture something very interesting that I thought, well, that really applies right away to what we are doing. He said that there are various big problems in the world, He summarized them as the world economy, second as ecology or peace with nature, third as foreign policy or peace among people, and then the fourth, namely political morale. And he says, all the problems in the world, the first that relate to the first three, namely to world economy, ecology, foreign policy, all that could easily be managed today with what we know in science, what we know. But the fourth, that we cannot handle, what he called political morale. Now, with this introduction, I read his summary. He says, political morale demands today a change of consciousness. See, he says, the thing is that it needs a change of consciousness. That we can't do with our knowledge of science. That we can't do with knowledge of science. Mankind cannot survive if it continues to put the new instruments, namely science and technology, economy, the whole realm of reason, into the service of the old consciousness. If we stick to the old consciousness, to the old way of thinking, then all our new knowledge of science and what we have and technology will not work. Therefore, a change of consciousness is a requisite for a change of structure, because the whole structure in the world has changed, the economic structure, the ecological structure has all changed. We cannot use the old instruments for that. Yet this does not come with... read again the sentence. Therefore, a change of consciousness is prerequisite for a change of structure. Yet this does not come without a deep shock. So the point he brings out is that a change of consciousness always first comes to us as a deep shock, not as a hooray, here it is, but always as the very opposite. He said, read the Sermon on the Mount. Whoever is touched by its consistent, non-contradictory truth will be horrified that nonetheless he himself fails to adhere to it. This shock is the beginning of a change of consciousness. And this is the shock that we always experience through the Bible and through the biblical history. Think of the prophets. We are taking the prophets. They were everything but nice to the people. They were always a shock to the people. They overturned the old way of thinking. And therefore, they were always persecuted and were misunderstood. And therefore, it took ages until first their prophecies were fulfilled. People didn't accept the new idea. They had to go to the end of the way. That end of the way was captivity in Assyria, captivity in Babylonia, destruction of the temple. That was the end of it. And then they began to turn.